Ulterior.
Day 4. We are almost there. We are almost at the finish line, and the payoff to just about everything that I've been doing this year with Ulterior, we have records 20 to 11 today as part of the series for my top 50 records of the year. And like I said at the end of yesterday's part 3, now we're getting into the records that like just narrowly missed the cut. They were in consideration for top 10, but there was something about the top 10 records that just like put them over that that threshold just a little bit, just enough. But these are still some exceptional releases that I am proud to talk about and gas up on the show right now. Thank you guys so much for tapping in, and I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. Number 20 is Bleeding Star by Kingdom of Giants. So what I will do here now is continue a trend from the prior episodes where I was like really talking highly about some of my favorite vocalist duos in scene bands today. And there's a part of me, like a really big part actually, that wants to call the dynamic in Kingdom of Giants between Dana and Johnny the most underrated vocal duo today. And before this EP, Bleeding Star, the last time that we got to like really intake material by Kingdom of Giants was on the 2020 record Passenger, which I would say that I go back to that record like quite often. I thought it was tremendous and an incredible showcase all around for like where Kingdom of Giants were in their prowess of electronic inspired metalcore. And like the fact that it had been 4 years since then, I think it really allowed that anticipation and excitement to build, at least within myself, for what would ultimately become Bleeding Star. And it's like not a single step was lost on this band. There was no like mistiming or miscue in anything with this EP. I think it ended up dropping at the exact right time that it did, because by dropping in 2024, it allowed Johnny to have rejoined the band and help Dana like be at the forefront of, I would say, some of the best songs that Kingdom of Giants have ever made. And I turn particularly to the closing 3-song stretch on the record, Smoke, Wasted Space, and Landslide. I thought that Smoke like really emphasized the dynamic between the two vocalists, and like these are some of the brightest fucking moments of Johnny's career so far, I would say. Wasted Space has like this insane riffage in the chorus that I think helps the voice of Johnny like blossom in a way that is heavy, and that kind of counteracts what I would consider to be some of my more favorite moments by Johnny in this band, in particular the closing song on Bleeding Star, rather, Landslide, which has a genuine case of being my favorite Kingdom of Giants song ever made. I would have to like really look back on Passenger and how I felt about a song like Blue Dream to like really make sure that I feel confident in giving that accolade to Landslide. But at the very least, it is the best song on this EP in my opinion, and the kind of song that like, say I didn't really spend the last couple of years revisiting Passenger, if I was like reintroduced to Kingdom of Giants through Bleeding Star, then this EP closing on Landslide would have been like that exclamation mark that made sure that I remembered what it was about this band that made me fall in love with them all those years ago, and then kind of like rekindle that love in a way, like rekindle that flame between listener and band when it comes to Kingdom of Giants. And I think Bleeding Star is, again, the exact kind of EP that this band needed at this point in time. And it's an EP that I'm going to be revisiting for as many years as I already have Passenger. Number 19 is Dust of the Human Shape by Ghost Atlas. By now in this series, I have already mentioned Ghost Atlas kind of in passing when discussing Era, and that's because both bands share the same vocalist, or I guess one of the vocalists rather, Jesse Cash. He is the clean vocalist slash guitarist for Era, and Ghost Atlas is his like side project, solo project, whatever you want to consider it. It's his outlet for getting across music in a way that he mostly wouldn't be able to have that ability through Era. And I say mostly because on the recent Era album from this year, Cure, there were a couple of songs that like actually did resemble Ghost Atlas songs at certain points in the runtime. And my hope is that if somebody was hearing Era for the first time through that record and they were like really enchanted by those moments from Jesse, then they would have been able to kind of like do the research about him and discover like, oh shit, he has an entire solo project where this is the predominant sound of it. And then you arrive on Dust of the Human Shape, which I think considering like Era having an album out in April, it worked out really, really well considering that this record came out a couple months prior towards the end of January. What the fuck? I was garbage truck outside of my apartment right now. That's also why my cats are like at the window just staring in awe at dumpster for some reason. Anyways, if you hear that noise in the background, disregard that because that's not the focus right now. The focus is fucking Ghost Atlas and one of the best albums I got to listen to all year long. And what I, or one of the many things rather that I love about Dust of the Human Shape is the opening stretch of songs that I think like really allowed Jesse to like nail down the sound for this record and the sounds and styles that he wanted somebody to be exposed to upon starting the record right away. Because the opening track, Void Voyeur, it's like it kind of has like that introductory element, I would say, in a way. It's not like super soft, nor does it feel intensity the same way that some of the other songs here do. It's like the perfect way for Jesse to like ease the listener in. And then after that is Panorama Daydream, which does scale things back quite a bit. It feels like very emotional while still being a relaxing track and kind of having Jesse the ability to like get across points that he wants to in a softer manner, and a manner that is quite distinct from what he does with Era. Lesser Gods, which is the third track on the record, this feels like a lot more, I would say, anthemic, and it kind of has like one of the styles that I like constantly felt when listening to this record all the way through was like 90s alternative rock. And like feeling in my mind like Incubus, Stone Temple Pilots, that's like kind of where my imagination was wandering to when hearing certain songs on this record, such as Lesser Gods. And I think it's one of the best songs that Jesse has ever been a part of. The guitar work just like being so like in alignment and in unison with the mellow backing track behind it, I think that was like the recipe for helping Lesser Gods become a song that is like as, I guess, rocking as it is beautiful in so many ways. And then Gaps in the Armoire, I think, is the true standout song of this EP, and like kind of in, I think, consideration for my favorite song that Jesse has ever been a part of, not just for Ghost Atlas, but like even if I expand that debate into Era's material with him. there's a real case that is like being made up in my head about Gaps in the Armoire being Jesse's best material, and it's been that way since it came out as a single in the beginning of January. So it's been almost a year now of Gaps in the Armoire, and I still cannot get enough of that song. In the same way that it's been almost a year now of Dust of the Human Shape, and I feel like I'm just like consistently going back to this record, maybe more so than Cure by Era. I fucking love that album, but like, it's Dust of the Human Shape, dog. Like, what do you want me to do? This album is fucking tremendous, and I would consider it also to be flawless. And I think it's very awesome that Jesse has enabled himself that ability to like kind of go back and forth between Era and Ghost Atlas and like really explore what it is about metalcore that is so alluring to him off of Era, and then come back to like a more centered sound with like 90s and 2000s alternative rock inspiration, and like really hone in on that part of his arsenal and his versatility, and just like be in the moment of Ghost Atlas and be in the moment of Dust of the Human Shape. And again, I think these songs are just fucking tremendous all the way. And if anything that I've been saying about like 90s or 2000s alternative rock feels like something that you could get into, then I would ask you guys, please, 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 please check out Dust of the Human Shape. Number 18 is Everything You Wanted by If Not For Me. One of the things about Ulterior that I have been able to like really admire and love about this whole platform is the ability to like actually see and keep record of my thoughts on bands as they evolve. And I say that because this album, Everything You Wanted, was not my introduction to If Not For Me. That would have been in 2022 off of the album Eulogy. And I very much so remember talking about Eulogy. And the reason why is, you know, because obviously like it's stuck in my head, but also it came out the same day as The Death of Peace of Mind by Bad Omens, and thus it was a part of the same episode where I reviewed both of those records. And I remember like, for as much as I loved and still love The Death of Peace of Mind, and for as much as I waffled on the episode about it, I very much still remember giving almost as much time, I felt like, to Eulogy. Because even if I didn't think it was like a home run of a record, it was very obvious to me, at least, the potential and the promise that was there within If Not For Me. It was specifically a song on that record called All Too Familiar that I thought was like fucking outstanding and made it to like the cutting room floor for 100 best songs of 2022. And so if nothing else, Eulogy like made me keep the name If Not For Me in my brain. And I wanted to see what they did next. I wanted to see them continue to evolve, and I wanted to see them make an album that made it to somewhere in this range on 50 Best Records. And now, because the ability to do that is made so easy because of how much I love Everything You Wanted, that is like kind of, again, to reiterate this point, that's like one of the most like fulfilling things about this whole platform, is because I got to talk about this band in a positive limelight 2 years ago, but not actually give them the accolade. And then now I get to refer to Everything You Wanted as my 18th favorite song of the year, record actually. And here is something that I will say about this album. It doesn't like change the metalcore formula. It's not going to be an album that anybody cites as being like a turning point or a shift in the genre, but it doesn't need to be anything of that sort, because what I've like kind of said before on the show is that if you're going to do a style of metalcore that like isn't super different and actually is quite ubiquitous, just do it well. That's all I'm going to ask for. And because of that, I look at Everything You Wanted as an album that does follow a formula, but it follows it about as well as any other band possibly could have this year. And it's a simple formula too. Like, are the heavy moments, like, do they feel aggressive enough? The catchy moments, do they feel like vibrant enough in my heart, in my soul, for me to get into the rhythm? And the answer to all those questions for Everything You Wanted is fucking yes, like a resounding yes. The opening song, Feel Me Now, it has like this kind of like a slow and methodical pacing in its verses that allows that chorus to just like punch you in the fucking face. And for Patrick to be the vocalist who is right there, like narrating the destruction that comes with the atmosphere of Feel Me Now. No Thanks to You has like this fucking outstandingly dance-inspired chorus. I would compare the chorus on No Thanks to You to some of the choruses that Rain City Drive put up this year. Like, that ability to just like be so rhythmically soothing and catchy, I think it's captured really, really well on No Thanks to You. Demons is like, it really satisfies that that intense palette that Everything You Wanted sometimes does look to and turn to. It feels like just so raw and energetic. The title track of Everything You Wanted is my favorite song on the record, probably my favorite song to date so far from If Not For Me. And everything I've been saying about like intensity and vibrancy, I think all of those ideas are married to each other on the title track, and thus you have, in my opinion, the biggest and best highlight of everything that If Not For Me has in their arsenal within this record. Alone, like, really dives into that bag of emotions, and it feels gripping in that sense. And the same thing as the closing song, Tragedy. I think If Not For Me had like different avenues to explore and build upon from where they're at on Eulogy. And not only did they meet like all of those requests of mine, I guess, for this record, but they exceeded all of the expectations that I possibly could have had. And now I look at If Not For Me as the kind of band that like controls their destiny. Like, they can take their name and their sound to like some of the highest of heights in the scene, and wherever they're going to go now, I will be right there alongside them, championing them for everything that they are. Number 17 is Four Keeps by Too Close to Touch. Yeah, this album is a lot to process and to like wrap your head around, I guess, the fact that you're even able to hear it. If anybody by this point for some reason somehow does not know, almost 3 years ago now, I believe it's going to be 3 years in March, so back in 2022, the vocalist of Too Close to Touch, Keaton Pierce, passed away. To us who like had no knowledge of Keaton's like health issues, it was so sudden and unexpected, and like that kind of a punch that just like knocks the fucking wind out of you. That's like the only real way I can describe it without getting like, you know, super emotional or like super in depth about like how I felt in that moment and how I still feel, again, almost 3 years later, talking about Keaton. And obviously the band like took their time deciding what they wanted to have happen and what they wanted to do with any material that might have been left over, or, you know, anything of that sort. And ultimately the decision came for Too Close to Touch to end the band, but end it on as high of a note as they possibly could given the circumstances. And that high note was putting together this final album, Four Keeps. The name of it, Four Keeps, like meaning for Keaton Pierce, because Keeps was a nickname that he had. And so this album is, I would say, for him. And it also feels like it's for us in some ways to like kind of, you know, have that closure and have that ability to, like, as properly as we can, say goodbye to a voice that meant so much to a lot of us. And so you really do have to go into this record with that understanding that it's not a release that the band, you know, had like a traditional approach to, and they couldn't like all be in a room together and write and bounce ideas off of each other and then go into a booth and record. Like, that's not how this record worked. It was very much so posthumously doing what they could to honor Keaton. But ultimately, like, doing what they could, I don't say that in like a bare minimum sense, because this record is not bare minimum whatsoever. It still feels like Too Close to Touch at its core, and it still has as many of the elements that help make this band who they are. I look at a song like Novocaine, which is the opener, and it features Noah Sebastian from Bad Omens, who was a close friend of Keaton's. And actually, like, months after Keaton had passed, the first like appearance and the first bit of motion from the remaining members of Too Close to Touch came by getting on stage with Bad Omens during the tour of the Concrete Jungle at the end of 2022, and they sang Sympathy, which was the opening song off of Have It Been Myself, which was the last full-length record by this band in 2016. And like, knowing how close Noah was to Keaton, like, I can't imagine what that moment felt like, and then also what it felt like to be like one of the voices on the opening track to the final bit of material that Keaton's name is ever going to be attached to. And I would say Novocaine, it feels like as much Bad Omens as it does Too Close to Touch. It reminds me a lot of Careful What You Wish For by Bad Omens, in like the way that it's structured and the way that it sounds from like a chorus and a verse perspective. Noah's feature spot on here is like one of the most like touching yet also cutting things I've ever experienced in my time of listening to music. Because like, if you have the understanding of like who Noah was to Keaton and what happened and why he's even on this album, it makes that entire section of his just like feel a lot more euphoric and cathartic in a way. If you still want to sing Fill in the Blanks We Need, You Can Do It Through Me While You're Gone. In time, the price of peace will cost us everything, but all the love you leave carries on. So you can sing while you're away. Tell me the words you want to say. Give them to me and I'll relay. But no, it just won't be the same. And I have no idea if that bridge was written, you know, while Keaton was still here, or if it was done after the fact and done to be on this record specifically. But whatever it is, like, you can sense the emotion in Noah's voice, and like, it feels like somebody who lost a loved one, because he did. And like, it's a moment on this album that like, I think really allows people to connect to Keaton through Noah's voice, and like, collectively, you know, grieve this loss and finally have the ability to do so through music. I think there are other songs on the album that like capture that spirit and essence of Too Close to Touch, such as It Disappear, Control, Hopeless, which features Telly Smith from The Word Alive in a spot basically the same as Noah, where now he gets to, you know, reflect back on a friend of his and like, you know, be in the moment with everybody experiencing that loss. And then there are some songs that I would say they feel and sound more raw than others on here. Like, the two that really jump out to me as being kind of like that are Hurt Reynolds and Designer Decay, the latter which features Elijah from Cane Hill. They just don't feel like as like, I guess, well produced as some of the other songs here. But I actually do like having that ability to hear like these raw takes on certain songs and get an understanding of like where this band could have been headed. Because Hurt Reynolds, it feels like a little bit more intense. It feels a little bit heavier than the like normal Too Close to Touch song. Whereas Designer Decay, it very much so is heavier, and it feels like this area that the band was like starting to explore and trying to figure out what does a heavier Too Close to Touch sound like. And I think Elijah being the voice that kind of helped navigate Keaton through that for Designer Decay, one of the best moments on this entire record. Heavy Hearts is like this acoustic ballad that is just Keaton singing, and, you know, having the ability to hear a song like that posthumously, that's, I want to say that's like magical. I want to say that it's surreal, and I think surreal is a word that I can extend to the entirety of this record. It's surreal to be able to get to hear this, and it's also, I would say, on my end, and I'm sure from the perspective of everybody else who has ever been touched or inspired by Too Close to Touch, it's so appreciative, like, towards the band to, or rather for them to have, you know, gone through this effort to put this piece together and give themselves and Keaton's friends and Keaton's family and Keaton's fans this moment to have closure on his contributions. And it's beautiful, and it's also like really, really sad. But I don't want to like harp on the sad part of this. I want to look at the beauty of this record and like really zone in on that, because I think Four Keeps is like beauty personified, from a musical standpoint, from the standpoint of like, you know, why this album even exists. It's something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. Like, I know that. Number 16 is What's Left Unsaid by Four in Hands. I really, really wish that I had the ability to call myself a day one fan for Four in Hands, but truthfully, it did come with Sharp Tone Records. It did come with their signing to a major label, and it was Chlorine Tears back in 2022 that like really got me on the pathway to being like, well, hold on now, what is this? You know, like, because I could hear a lot of what it was about metalcore from a prior generation within Four in Hands' identity and their core sound that I just fucking love and I'm always like a sucker for. And then so from there, I went backwards and got to the Bleed the Dream EP from earlier in 2022. And I think Bleed the Dream is one of the best EPs of the year so far, or not the year, the decade so far. Just so much about that EP that just like spoke to me on like a personal level for metalcore. Title track, Separation Souvenir, A Cardiac Winter, like these songs were fucking hitting and they were doing everything that I asked for them to do for, again, this sector of metalcore. And then it was Tearing Down Your Reality, and then almost a full year later, it was conditioned for a head-on collision featuring Ollie Appleyard of Static Dress, and that ultimately ended up being the lead single for what we would later know to be What's Left Unsaid, the debut full-length by Four in Hands. And I've been speaking about this point so many times in this series and 100 Best Song series. This was the year for a band to just like show their whole hand on a debut record and make sure that their introduction to some listeners was as like focused and memorable of an initiation as possible. And that's what people got in fucking spades off of What's Left Unsaid. I just mentioned a condition for a head-on collision featuring Ollie Appleyard. And for as much, I would say, life that Ollie helped inject into that song, it's still the core spirit of Four in Hands and the vocal balance between Tyler's screams and Jack's cleans that I think have like made the case of themselves as being the like the purest form and the simplest form of Four in Hands' entire identity and like their personality and the recognition of who they are. And getting to hear that, like, in contrast to Ollie's voice, I think that was one of the most rewarding parts of Condition for a Head-On Collision. And then afterwards, we got to singles such as God Under Fingernails and Horror Domain. God Under Fingernails is, like, as much of, like, a... just like a face-bashing anthem as Foreign Hands can possibly put out right now. And it delivers on every note that I would ask for that kind of a song that is just, like, so intense and aggressive to be able to deliver upon. Horror Domain, I think with that song, you kind of get a little bit more of what I've been speaking about with, like, Tyler and Jack's vocals and how they just, like, so perfectly and effortlessly complement each other. And then there are so many other parts of the album where that's kind of, I think, like the centerpiece of it and the thing that you constantly go back for, like Resetting the Senses, A Memory and Latency. A Memory and Latency, I think specifically, is like one of the key points of this record. And I think it's a big advancement for the sound of Foreign Hands. I also really, really love it when this record kind of like slows things down a little bit, like on Magnetic Roses, but I would say that song, it's the slowing down part of it, it's more so to create like this emotional ambience in a way, whereas on, say, Shapeless in the Dark, it feels more like ominous and creepy, and I think that is a bag that Foreign Hands are able to dive into like so extraordinarily well, and just about as well as any other metalcore or post-hardcore band who, you know, likes to be a little bit brooding at times. And I think Foreign Hands like just really carved out a spot in anybody's best of list for 2024. They're a band who is not going to be like avoidable or escapable at some point in the near future. They're on the up and up. They're on the rise. That upward trajectory is going to be so fucking satisfying to watch. And I cannot wait to see what Foreign Hands are able to build upon off of a record that is just as tremendous as What's Left Unsaid. Number 15 is Second Shadow by Inertia. I guess, stop me if you've heard this by now on this show, in this series, a metalcore band's debut album. And what a fucking debut album this is, guys. And the truth, though, is that when it comes to like the output of Inertia over the last number of years, I was sleeping, sadly, admittedly. I know that I had like seen the name Inertia in passing, and the artwork for the 2022 EP Memoria, it's actually like quite familiar, but I didn't get around to it. It was just like, you know, at a time where other things were happening and kind of just like wanting to like focus on certain parts of Ulterior, but then also my outside life. But then getting into the singles rollout for Second Shadow, this was where things like really started to like force my hand, I would say, in recognizing Inertia as like one of the like best sounding and hottest rising bands right now out of Australian metalcore, but then at large the entirety of the scene. It was the single Dominion back in March of this year where I was like, well, okay, this is really, really fucking sick. Like, this sounds like something I could, like, easily sink my teeth into. And it was because of that fucking intensity, man, that ferocity that I ask for in this style of metalcore, and I think that was executed to a flawless degree off of Dominion. And then Too Far Gone was the next single that I had the chance of, like, really enjoying, and I think the thing about that song that, like, really stood out to me and made me further open my eyes to this act was the effortlessness and the, like, the ease with which Julian is able to transition between his cleans and his screams. Julian is, I truly think, one of the best vocalists of the year, and his performance on Too Far Gone is like what really initiated that discussion in my head, and then now ultimately like furthers the conversation once we get into the rest of this record. And then after that, it was Leviathan, which features Jacob from Thornhill. And I think having that ability to hear how Julian contrasted Jacob, it wasn't just the ability to hear them like on a song together, but also I know that myself, and I'm sure plenty of others out there, maybe even some of you guys, you look at Jacob in like one of the like the highest brackets or the highest tiers possible when it comes to how good metalcore vocalists are. Jacob, for a lot of you guys, is probably like in like S tier or A tier, somewhere around there. I know he definitely is for myself. Julian sounded like he belonged exactly wherever Jacob is positioned in the hierarchy on Leviathan. I think that was another moment that like really sold me on Second Shadow and made me understand like, okay, this is an album that I need to check out when it's out. I need to give it the time, and I need to let you guys know in turn what I believe Second Shadow is. And I said it back when I reviewed it, and I'm saying it again now. I think Second Shadow is one of the best records of the entire year. And even just from the opening stretch, let's just say the first four songs, I think you instantly have an understanding of who Inertia are and what it is about metalcore that they're able to like add their own flavors to. The opening song, Counterfeit, it does like such a like a masterful job, I would say, at like pacing itself. And you have like that slow intro where it's really Julian like easing the listener into what is going to soon explode with this wall of sound. And like so many of these ideas that feel so, I would say, maybe not unique to the scene, but I think in this exact delivery, that feels unique to Inertia. Dying to Let You Go, which is the third song, like my favorite off of this record. I am convinced of that now by this point. And I think Julian is like so, again, marvelous in his delivery of the chorus and how it feels like the kind of chorus that belongs in like giant arenas, and especially with like the vocal effects that you can hear in the background as the rest of the instrumentation is coming in. I think those are elements that like really made Die and Let You Go feel emblematic of what it is I love about Second Shadow. And I think those emotional high notes are further explored on songs such as Replicant and Decompose. And I think that's where Second Shadow like really finds its strongest point and its strong suit. And then take nothing away from like the instrumentation and the rest of the band. I know I've just been gushing over Julian's vocals so far, but the rest of Inertia, like they act as kind of like, I would say like the heartbeat of this music. And there's a song called Static where some of the guitar work, like not totally, but in at least like some regards, reminds me a little bit of like Animals as Leaders. Like that technicality, I feel like you can hear be like sprinkled into some of what Inertia is doing, not just on Static, but on much of Second Shadow. And what I said earlier to you guys about like me having initially been sleeping on Inertia, like I feel like criminal to myself in some ways by doing that, because I was like robbing myself of early chances to really get a glimpse into the window that leads to Inertia and leads to this understanding that I now have about how goddamn talented everybody in this band is, and how Inertia is an act that myself and anybody else who considers themselves to be fans of modern metalcore like have to be paying attention to and have to respect in so many manners. Number 14 is The Black by Immanence. from Sweden with love, as they say. And love is absolutely the word to use, I would say, in describing the Black, at least from myself, because of the journey that I have taken with Immanence. And I'm going to refer back to what I said about inertia and how I unfortunately had slept on the band for a while. Definitely like the opposite case with Immanence, because I believe I've spoken about Immanence every single year since Ulterior began. And my timeline with Immanence predates Ulterior because it was the 2019 album Turn the Light On that was my introduction to Immanence. And a part of that came from like how, like, I would say exuberant I could hear Sam and Marcos from the State of the Scene talking about that record when they reviewed it. And then it ended up being Sam's record of the year, or rather album of the year, for 2019. And revisiting the album with like that understanding that somebody who I would say I like trusted their word on liked the album that much and to that extent, I think that actually did help me like further connect to Turn the Light On beyond how I already did. And then it was the 2011 record, Heaven in Hiding, 2021 record, Heaven in Hiding. It was the final album that I reviewed, reviewed on a podcast, I would say, for that year. And like, just continued to really like nail down what it is about Immanence's like obsession with blending metalcore and orchestral elements and creating something that people were, I think, like really able to like identify what it is about Immanence that is so special and so unique. And I think given how much I liked Heaven in Hiding, it felt like kind of a tall task in a way for the band to either like mirror the excellence of Heaven in Hiding or even top it. And the rollout for The Black, I think it gave listeners so many opportunities and chances to like discover what it is about Immanence that they really, really love, because half of the album had been released as singles before we got to hear the rest of the record. And I know that for some people, like a large and drawn out singles rollout isn't ideal. And I suppose I can understand why, but also I will never feel any bit of negativity about having more chances to hear new songs by my favorite bands. And so the singles rollout for The Black, I thought it was perfect. For having been nearly a year long, there is nothing about that singles rollout that I would take back. I think starting off with Come Hell or High Water, like, really emphasized the orchestral elements and how Eddie's voice is able to like find the balancing act between those areas of the band and then the heavier side. Desolation has like this really intense feeling to it. There's a part of it where Eddie screams, "This is the Black, there's no coming back." And it feels like super epic, I would say. And that actually predates any announcement about this album being called The Black. So it was very much so like one of those hidden in plain sight setting of the stages, I would say. And then from there, the whole album, I truly believe, is Immanence personified. I love how on Heaven Shall Burn, it is like this very quiet orchestral arrangement that leads you into the breakdown kind of unexpectedly. Beyond the Pale has like one of the best choruses ever written by the band. The intro to Call of the Void is like so frantic and full of this energy that feels explosive while also like somewhat soothing through the violins. It's like a weird way to explain that song, but I think at large, The Black is kind of a weird album to explain, and maybe even Immanence is a weird band to explain. And then there are two songs on here that I guess like maybe by definition feel like interludes, but at the same time, they feel like parts of the like the lifeblood of The Black. Cul-de-sac and Lenoir. Cul-de-sac, it has like this like as if it was a score for a movie, like some kind of an epic movie like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. Like it just has that feeling to it, like as if it, like instead of the band opting for just like an interlude to like get to come with May into the Call of the Void, it's like a movie, you know? It feels like so larger than what this album actually is. And then Le Noir, which is the closer on the record, it is a 3-minute violin and orchestral piece. There's like no full band arrangement by Eminence. Eddie does not sing on the song. It's just this piece at the end of the record that is like as beautiful as it is like somehow full of somber. And it's like getting to have that be the closing experience on the record. It was like I had the chance to just like kind of sit back and reflect on everything I had listened to by then, while there is this like incredibly beautiful and moving piece of music acting as the final bit of narration for, I would say, the like the complete package of The Black, and how even after Turn the Light On and Heaven in Hiding and like feeling like I understood already how insane of a band Eminence is, it was like The Black was the ultimate culmination of everything that Eminence has stood for so far. And I say so far because there's no reason for me to believe that there is not an album better than The Black that this band is capable of. There is a lot to look forward to for the future of Eminence. They feel like the kind of band that is like right there on the cusp of breaking out into like that like Spirit Box or Sleep Token level of success. And if that is going to be the case, and that is the future of Eminence, then it is an incredibly bright and well-earned future that we're all about to witness. Number 13 is Things Are Different Now by Rain City Drive. So I'm going to be like just super candid about this entry, and like a part of what it is about Things Are Different Now that has made me appreciate this record in a way that I didn't, I maybe didn't think that I would, but I'm ultimately very, very happy that I do. And I say all of that to say that Rain City Drive is a band that has been like super up and down for me. And I'm talking specifically about the post Johnny Craig iteration of the band, the iteration that started with Mamik Andrew at the forefront of the band, and all the way back from them releasing Heavier as a single in July of 2019. Had Ulterior been around for 2020, then you guys would have heard me speak like so fucking highly of To Better Days. And you would think that To Better Days was like one of my favorite albums of all time by the way that I discussed it back then. And you know what? Maybe it is. At the very least, I think To Better Days is like a top 10 album of this decade so far. Like, I have that strong of an attachment and a level of adoration for that album. And then from there, they went into the 2022 self-titled record, and I can't lie about this, y'all. That chain was looking a little bit fake after hearing that second record by the band, or with Matt, I mean. I don't want to call the self-titled record bad, because I don't think it's actually bad, but it's definitely like boring in a lot of areas. And considering what To Better Days meant to me, this being the follow-up, it felt like just not at all what it was I was looking for, or any of the sounds that I was interested in hearing. And I thought as a whole, the album just like kind of fell flat, even with some singles or songs on there that I thought were great, like Waiting on You and Dreams and Blood Runs Cold. That as an entire record and as like a full body of work, just I just couldn't fuck with it. Like, it wasn't for me. It wasn't something that I have, like, any real desire to ever return to, sans the songs that I just mentioned. So, I say all of that to say that this was a legacy game for Rain City Drive, this record. This was the chance for them to show me that The Chain was indeed not fake, and that the self-titled record was just a misstep in any kind of brilliance that they might still have. And I think it was a very hot start for the rollout, because it was Frozen last year that came out as the lead single, at the time a standalone though, but still, you know, the first bit of music from the next project by this band that we got to experience. And I, like, very quickly fell in love with Frozen. I thought it was a tremendous song. I thought it had a lot of the characteristics of To Better Days that were missing on self-titled, and was the kind of song that, like, felt like it was a song that I could claim as being mine. Like, it felt like this was the exact kind of song that I was looking for out of the band. And then after that, we had Medicate Me back at the start of, it was either May or April this year, I can't remember exactly right now, but it was in that springtime period. Medicate Me is like one of the catchiest singles of the entire year, and by and large, maybe one of the catchiest songs that I've ever been able to hear in my life. The dynamic between Matt and Rory Rodriguez from Dayseeker, who is featured on that song, like, next level, cannot take away a single thing about that. And then the remainder of the singles, Never Bloom, Over Me, and Concrete Closure, all doing an amazing job at, like, reassuring me, like, everything is going to be fine. Like, look at the name of the album. Things are indeed different now. It's going to be an album that you as in myself, I'm being that person right now. An album that you're able to, like, say, this is Rain City fucking Drive. This is the band that I was once upon a time so happy to, like, sing the praises of. And a lot of what I love about this band is just littered all throughout the rest of this record. These choruses are just godly, bro. Fucking insane. Like, Lose My Composure, Wish You the Best. These songs got some fucking aura and magic to them. I've spoken about Disarm the Hourglass a couple times by now. Disarm the Hourglass, it feels like, in some ways, the outlier on the record, because it doesn't have a ton of, like, the same bits of pop inspiration that other songs on here do. It gets right to the point. There is no intro to that song, just, like, dives you into the, like, I would say, the side of Rain City Drive that can feel, like, a little bit chaotic and frantic, but still, like, so fulfilling in everything that it does. And then the closing song, Sacrifice, is one of my favorite closers of the entire year, and it's Rain City Drive exploring a different area of their sound that isn't, like, super tied to where they've been at already. It felt a little bit to me like Kingdom of Giants. And I know that's, like, a weird comparison to make for Rain City Drive, but that's what I was getting out of Sacrifice, that, like, really well done electronic inspired buildup, and then Matt and the rest of the band just, like, being this wall of sound that just, like, batters you until the album closes. Like, I could not feel anything aside from just, like, pure joy in that moment of finishing this album for the very first time. And, like, in a weird way, I just felt, like, so proud of Rain City Drive. Like, that band in that moment felt like the prodigal son that returned. It felt like the return to form while, like, still having the ability to be, like, as pop-inspired and pop-infused as they clearly want to be. Rain City Drive delivered something to me on Things Are Different Now that, like, it didn't just, like, save my attachment to the band, it, like, fueled it. I might feel right now in this moment, like, as big of a fan of this band as I've ever been, and that includes off of To Better Days. Not saying that I like Things Are Different Now more than To Better Days, because I definitely don't, but there is a difference between how excited I was after To Better Days and how excited I am now, because now it feels like I got my band back. It feels like we're just, like, moving ahead full force. Yes, I said we're. This is my fucking band, guys. Rain City Drive, Things Are Different Now. Y'all are some fucking real ones. Number 12 is Maybe in Another Life. by Bloom. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how Bloom is another band that I was not like totally late to, but late enough to where the 2020 EP In Passing was something that I had to like go backwards to after hearing Sink Into the Soil in 2022 and feel like there was a lot for Bloom to offer that maybe other bands who have this like kind of a throwback style of metalcore might be missing in some areas, because I think what Bloom had been able to do really well for their entire tenure thus far, and then especially on Maybe In Another Life, was capture a lot of like the emotions and the more like gloomy side, I guess, of 2000s metalcore, and like really feed into those characteristics. And that's what made Bound to Your Whispers feel like a can't miss single last year. And the same thing with the title track, Maybe In Another Life. And I think for myself, like I said, since discovering Bloom, I've like been able to gravitate towards them. But then it was the title track that like really made me think like this album could be something that I just fucking gush over in 2024 and hail as one of the best records of the year. And evidently so, that ended up being the case. And there's a lot about this record that I just continue to marvel at, namely the dynamic on vocals between Jono and Jared. I think Jono has like one of the most like ferocious sounding voices in all of metalcore right now, and these are the kind of screams that I think like belong in this style of metalcore that has like post-hardcore influences infiltrating it. Siren Song, he sounds like a fucking beast on there, just like he does on one of my 100 best songs from last week, which is Through the Threshold Beyond the Bend. That is the closer for the record. I think it is one of the best closing songs of the entire year, and another showcase for the entire band to like really leave a lasting impression on a listener. And then there are some songs on the record that like kind of embrace a like a slower side at times, and a side that I feel like is meant to evoke a lot of emotion out of listeners while still being like kind of creepy or like unsettling in the ways that these ideas are approached. And they're still done like differently from each other. I'm going to use Carve Yourself Into My Lungs and You and I as examples. You and I feels like it's more so Jared's song, and it is his like defeated sounding tone that I think really helps make that song the tearjerker that it is. And then right before that, Carve Yourself Into My Lungs, that is more so like Jono screaming over this very faint instrumentation. And I think that kind of like puts his voice and his cadence like under a microscope, and you really have those moments that allow you to analyze just what it is about his voice that is like, it feels like so triumphant in a way, while still being like just so like gut-wrenching to hear because of the emotion that he is pouring out. And I think like I've gone back to the word emotion a lot when describing Maybe In Another Life, and I feel like that's just kind of the like the predominant mindset that I'm in when hearing this record. I feel like so in touch with every emotional outlet that the band put into this record, and in turn, any emotional outlet that I like look into for myself when hearing this album, and finding the ways to relate to these songs and finding reasons to like want to just shout like out into the sky, out into the unknown about how much I love Bloom, how much I love Maybe In Another Life, and how I believe that this is the kind of record that could genuinely make somebody's year. Number 11 is Infinite Void by With Sails Ahead. Y'all know how I found out about Wood Sails Ahead a couple years ago? They had a cover of Gurenge, which is the first opening song for Demon Slayer. And I fucking love Demon Slayer. I fucking love the way that the cover sounded. So I was like, all right, this band rocks. This band rules. But unfortunately, I probably just lost sight of the band somewhere along the way. Because when Darting Eyes released as the lead single for Infinite Void in November of last year, where was it on my radar? Where was the respect that I showed it? Like, where was I, basically? I can tell you where I wasn't. I wasn't on Darting Eyes, because somehow it just, like, went over my head and I missed it. So then I didn't actually hear Darting Eyes until listening to Infinite Void back at the end of April when the record released. And I was just like, it was a moment of, like, hands on my head. Like, what have I done? What the fuck? What kind of mistake did I make? Because had I listened to Darting Eyes when it came out last year and reviewed it, I am telling you guys that Darting Eyes would have been, like, in top 10 or top 5 of 100 best songs of last year. And let's say Darting Eyes was a brand new song this year, it would have been top 10 or top 5 in this year's list. Because I think Darting Eyes is one of the best songs of the entire decade so far. Darting Eyes is everything that I love about this kind of, like, upbeat sounding post-hardcore wrapped into one. And I think given how the instrumentation just sounds, like, so fun and full of life, and then the prowess that Sierra shows in her vocals, both singing and screaming on Darting Eyes, it is a recipe to make Darting Eyes the kind of song that I will never ever forget about in my life. And I think, like, Darting Eyes being third on the track list, that did a lot to help me, like, really lock in on Infinite Void, because getting through the record up to that point, I was like, okay, I like Every Day the Sky Falls. I think Honey, which has the pulses feature, is really cool. And then it's like, holy fuck, Darting Eyes is one of the greatest songs of all time. Okay, what's gonna happen now? And that created, like, this level of excitement within me that I can't describe in words. I can't find any way to emphasize it to you guys. It was just there, and it was so fucking prevalent within me. And then I feel like something else about Infinite Void that has been, like, so easy for me to identify as a strength of the record, or at the very least, a part of it that is making me, like, feel so drawn to it every single time I hear the record, is how some of these songs, they feel, like, very, like, bubbly and vibrant and, like, colorful, I guess. And then there are some that feel, like, darker. Okay, I guess the best way to explain it is, you guys know that meme of, like, these two houses next to each other, and one is, like, white and pink and, like, very bright, and then the other is just, like, black and gray and very brooding. I think that's kind of the, like, the image that comes to my mind when I hear, let's say, Swear Words and Lemon Grab. Those songs feel like the white pink house. Like, they feel very, like, exuberant, and, like, I can look outside the window of my apartment right now and see the sunlight, see the trees, like, see people walking their dogs. Like, it feels, like, happy and, like, upbeat and vibrant in that sense. And then let's look at Rin and Oblivion. Those songs feel like doom in some ways. Like, there's, like, this sense of doom looming over the record, and it's like Sierra's voice being able to navigate those two styles and ideas, like, so perfectly, and not one better than the other. I think that's another area of Infinite Void that was, like, I was sold on the record once I realized in my head that, like, this is what was going on and this was how I felt about it. The album knows how to be beautiful. It knows how to be like kind of frantic and feel like it's running away from something or like running at a high speed pace. And I will always have like such a, like a strong love for any kind of post-hardcore that sounds this way. And beyond just sounding this way, sounding this fucking good. Because there are other post-hardcore bands that I can think of and I can shout out who are doing the genre like justice and doing it well. But I truthfully look at With Sails Ahead off of Infinite Void as being like right at the front of that assembly line, as being the band that is the best in the world at that genre and pushing the ideas ahead into this next part of the decade with as much like character and charisma and personality as anybody else right now, or anybody before them, or anybody that's going to come after them. But what I'm ultimately trying to get at is that Infinite Void is the kind of album that, like, wherever With Sails Ahead is going to be going to in the future, myself and anybody else who is like super in love with this record is going to be able to look back on Infinite Void and say like that was the foundation of wherever they're at in the future. And for those reasons, I think Infinite Void has a case of ending up as being like not just one of the best albums of this decade, but when it's all said and done, maybe one of the most important. And that's it. Those were records 20 to 11. So again, kind of the runner-ups, if you will, the albums that just barely missed the mark, but had every reason to actually be in top 10. And then now we have arrived at the conclusion, not just of this series, but for Ulterior in 2024. There is one part left. There is one mission left, one journey left, one story left. And it is the top 10 records of the year. So come back tomorrow, and whether it takes 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever fucking hours, I am going to tell you guys about my 10 favorite records of the year and ultimately why number one is what it is and why it is the 2024 record of the year for Ulterior. Thank you guys so much for listening and for tapping into the series so far this week. I cannot express enough to you guys like my gratitude and my sincerity in every thank you that I am saying right now and that I've said in the past and that I will say in the future. So I'm just going to say thank you over and over again right now. Thank you, 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 and fucking thank you guys for, you know, caring enough about what it is I'm doing and hopefully caring about these records, because I'm doing all this to like not just get across my points about the records, but also maybe convince anybody to like give these records a chance or a second chance or, you know, whatever it might be. And I feel like now I'm talking in circles and my voice, I can feel it's like starting to disintegrate even further. So I'm going to go ahead and get out of here now. Thank you guys so much and look forward to the conclusion of this entire series. Thank you.